GoDaddy.com. Use the code PODNAME139 for $7.49.com domain names. GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1124, July 30, 2009.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
from musicalley.com. The name of the song is Three Apples and Oranges, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce the name of the group. It's KWBJBO or something like that. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Lincoln, Nebraska. I picked night before last, I guess, when was it? I'm all messed up now. I guess today's Wednesday, so it would have been Monday. Tuesday. I had to think about that for a minute. Tuesday morning, I went to Weirton, West Virginia, and picked up a load that delivers to Crete, Nebraska, which is about 30 miles from Lincoln, Nebraska. So I made it last night, picked the load up, and then I made it late yesterday afternoon. I made it to some place called Smartville. I think it's Smartville or Smartsburg, Indiana. It's approximately, 30 miles east of Indianapolis on Interstate 74. There's a Pilot truck stop out there, and it may be farther than that, I don't know. But it's something like that, but it's east of Indianapolis. So I stopped at that Pilot truck stop, and then that's where I slept at. Woke up, took my 10-hour break, woke up about 2:30 a.m. this morning, my time, Central Time, and guess it was about 4:30 when I got out of there. Didn't record a podcast last night. I was just, kind of in a hurry and really too tired. So left there about 4:30 this morning, and then I got here to Lincoln. It was about sometime after, it might have been like 4:15 or something when I arrived here. I stopped a couple of times along the way, of course, once to get fuel and get something to eat and so on and so forth. And when I got here, my friend that lives here in Lincoln, Ken, came and met me, and we went in his car and went to this steakhouse and had a really nice meal there. And then he brought me back to my truck, and so I've kind of been going through my email and kind of looking over a few things, answering some email on the computer, and then record this podcast and see if I can get headed to bed. Because at this point, I've been up I've been up quite a while now. So I'll be ready, once I do go to bed, should be able to go right to sleep and without too much problem. So the weather is very nice here. It was cloudy, I think, most of the day. The sun kind of popped out now and then. And at least here in Lincoln this evening while we were eating, it was like 77 degrees and, so pretty pleasant weather. Sort of really kind of cool. They would be having some hotter weather around here during this part of the summer. But it's just been kind of a cool year. And, of course, there's some parts of the country that have experienced even record lows. There's parts of the country that really aren't having, they're sort of not even really considering having summer. It's just, it's exceptionally kind of, it's a cooler summer. And I think that just, to me, that reinforces the fact that, this idea of global warming is, Mother Nature is kind of putting the lie to it. It was just hysteria, I think. And people, you know, it's kind of interesting that people can be made to believe. There are so many brainwashed people in the world that a lot of them can be made to believe something that isn't happening. And, you know, one thing, you know, the weather is always variable. It's never the same. You can kind of roughly guess what kind of weather you're going to get during seasons. You know, like in the winter, it's going to be cold, and you're probably going to get some snow now and then, depending on the area that you're in. In the summer, it's going to be warmer. It may be hotter, so on and so forth. But people can be made to believe almost anything if they're suggestible. And all it takes is you repeat it enough and you sound authoritative. There's some people that are going to be made to believe it. The other thing is if someone, that's supposedly an authority or has a bunch of pedigrees after their name, so-and-so, and they're, they've gone to this school and that school, and they've got this degree and that degree, and sometimes, a lot of times people will put credence, they'll give credence to that based on sort of the authority that comes from a knee-jerk reaction. And it might simply be a knee-jerk reaction. There's a certain knee-jerk reaction to people that have all these degrees, pedigrees, what have you. There's a certain knee-jerk reaction to that. People will believe that, or if they look a certain way, if they're dressed a certain way, people will believe. People can be made to believe as long as, you have for example, you have con men sometimes that pretend to be doctors, and they kind of dress up and they sort of look the part, and some of them have even been practicing surgery and God knows what else, and come to find out they're not doctors at all. They never went to school, but they simply looked the part. And people believed. And, or you can have somebody pretending to be a businessman and, basically it's con man. But if they dress right, if they dress a certain way, then people will kind of have a knee-jerk reaction to really what amounts to a uniform, a business uniform, suit and tie, what have you. And if they sound the part and they look right, then people will tend to believe them. And they can get sucked in. And of course, with a con man, it's especially true that they're charming. They're inordinately charming. They're adept at making people feel good about themselves or that they're going to get some special treatment, they're going to get something special out of the deal. Too good to be true type stuff. And, of course, people will... certain people are vulnerable to that. And so that's present all around us in a myriad of different ways. And it doesn't matter really how intelligent you are, what your IQ is, or even if you're educated or not. What's more important than anything else is that as to whether you can be taken by a con man or a con woman is how vulnerable your ego is to someone, and you stand out to them, you can stand out to them like a sore thumb, vulnerable to someone kind of sucking on your ego and making you feel good. And to a con man or a con woman, there's a term, it's called, you're an easy mark. M-A-R-K, a mark. They can tell right away. You stick out like a sore thumb to them. It's like, they've got radar for it. And so but it requires a character flaw. It requires the presence of a character flaw. And that character flaw stands out. And it takes two to tango. If, you know, there's an old saying that you can't cheat an honest man or an honest woman, an honest person. You can't cheat an honest person. You've got to be looking for, you know, you have to have some dishonesty on your own part, looking for something, some special treatment, looking for something. Your ego, the wrong side of your ego, is looking for validation of some sort, in other words. So, but this whole global warming thing is, a lot of people are finally kind of beginning to see that it's not true, it's kind of a lie. There are still people that have kind of bought into it that want to believe, kind of like the, well, I guarantee you, you know, like with this Bernie Madoff, you know, and his Ponzi scheme. There were people that wanted to believe that, and regardless of what happened with the economy, that they could always get 10%. He was giving them a 10% return, guaranteed, blah, blah, blah. And there were people that wanted to believe that. And he was able to kind of take them in for a long time. He was able to just suck them right in. And they wanted to believe that they could get something for nothing. Or, you know, and it wasn't really, in this case, it wasn't really something for nothing, but it was more than what they should have gotten. You know, more than what the rest of the market was paying. Well, he was guaranteeing, here, you know, I can guarantee you 10% regardless of what happens. And he was really adept at, you know, kind of taking advantage of people. And they, and you know, and these were supposedly rich people that he, of course, a lot of them were rich people that he was kind of taking advantage of. And a lot of charities got took advantage of. People wanted to believe, and they got sucked right in. But the point is that even after the scandal broke, there were probably still people that wanted, that still had that tendency to want to believe. They were invested in it. In this case, they literally were invested in it. Now, in the case of the global warming, people have kind of emotionally invested. They're sort of emotionally invested in the idea of global warming, and since it's ambiguous, they don't. They, you know, they're very. Some people are very reluctant to give it up. You know, because they've kind of emotionally invested in it, therefore they're deriving some sense of their identity out of it. And they're just, you know, some people are going to be kind of diehards in being able to give that up. And even though it's obvious now that the preponderance of evidence is kind of suggesting, hey, things are cooling off, and the data, you know, if you look over the data for the last 9 years, things have actually been cooling and not warming. And, of course, the Earth is cyclical. Temperatures go up, temperatures go down. And over long-term trends. And so this idea of, you know, global warming, people were, you know, the apocalypse and so on and so forth, people became invested and emotionally. And so now the evidence is kind of turning the other way. Things are cooling off, and but there are still people that want to believe. And but I think that's turning. I think that the whole thing's kind of turning around. And the thing with Obama is that's happening with Obama as well. There were a lot of people that were kind of emotionally invested in the idea that Obama was going to solve the race problem, and we were going to, you know, once and for all, we were going to vote for this black president, and he was going to solve the race problem and sort of alleviate the guilt that a lot of people feel, the so-called white guilt. And that, you know, it was going to be post-racial America, and everything was going to be hunky-dory and better. And of course, it just got worse. But a lot of people are finally, you know, once they, so many people get laid off, and they see the economy kind of continuing to go to pot, kind of continue to fall apart, they're kind of, that sort of brutal reminder of reality, that, you know, things are getting worse, and the Obama administration is, the administration is doing things to make things worse. They're not doing anything to make things better. And things are continually getting worse and worse and worse. More and more and more people are being laid off. And so finally, there are still people that are sort of emotionally invested in Obama. And of course, the with Obama, with a cult figure like that, he's a huge kind of a cult figure. With a cult figure like that, a lot of people can kind of be reluctant to give up the emotional investment. But then again, that when you have a cult figure, when it's a human being that they're sort of worshiping as a false god, that can easily kind of flip around and pretty quickly turn into scorn. And, you know, of course, it's the same, you know, when it turns into scorn, it's the same thing. I mean, it has exactly the same effect. It's, you know, what you hate becomes your god. And so the people that, you know, for example, the irony is the people that were involved in all the Bush hatred over the past number of years were actually, whether they realized it or not, they were actually making George Bush into their god. Doesn't matter whether you love your god or if you hate your god, if you're doing it in that, you know, kind of a false context, it doesn't matter one way or the other. And especially if that false god's a human being. And so what's happening now, people are kind of seeing Obama, they're beginning to, you know, the puppy love, I guess, is beginning to kind of wear off, and his numbers are beginning to drop. And I think since Obama was such a huge cult figure at one point, so quickly he turned into a big cult figure, the potential downside is just as great. It's just as great or greater. And, you know, people can turn on him, you know, they can really turn on him and quickly reverse his political fortunes. So I'm actually kind of optimistic at this point. The Obama administration and the Democrats in control Congress are still dangerous. Got to keep an eye on them. But their fortunes, I think, are quickly turning. People are suffering, as I say, oftentimes has the ability to cause some people to wake up, even if they've kind of emotionally invested in something. Once they begin to suffer, it can cause some people to wake up. Now there are others that will simply, you know, start making excuses and look for other things to blame, and so it depends on how much emotional energy they've invested and you know what parts of their identity have been invested in the cult figure. And you know, so it's an interesting thing that's happened, but it's also dangerous. The country's in a dangerous position, and quite frankly, depending on how genuinely people are able to wake up, it kind of, even if we were able to get rid of Obama, we're still in a very precarious position because there's still too many people that are suggestible. People have, you know, in order to get rid of the suggestibility, you have to really want to wake up. You have to really begin to look at yourself. Self-observation, honestly looking at yourself, is imperative if you really want to wake up. And a lot of these people may not really want to wake up. It just depends. Depends on a number of factors, and so you can't really tell. So we may be okay, you know, it's okay in the shorter term if we're able to kind of get rid of Obama, but in the long term, the trend isn't good, because there's way too many people that are suggestible. And of course, the younger generation has really been corrupted, and the whole process sort of revolves around corrupting a country like America. It's been done primarily through the school system, sort of parents feeding their kids to the public school system, to the nationalized public school system. And, you know, I went, so it ain't gonna hurt you to go, that type of thing. And in the meantime, the school system is able to sort of pry each generation farther and farther away from their common sense, causing them to become therefore more and more suggestible, and therefore more malleable. So it's an insidious process, and eventually the country will fall apart. Every country on the face of the earth eventually falls apart. The government falls apart, and some other government takes over. And there's not a single country in history that's ever been that at some point they fell apart. So, you know, even like the Roman Empire, eventually even it fell apart. And in today's world, with the tremendous speed up that's happened as a result of all this communication that we have today, the electronic communication that we have today, things are really speeded up, and so that also speeds the process up of moral decay. But it can also, it's a double-edged sword, because it can also, the communication can work in the opposite direction. For example, it makes it much easier. If you have a searching person on the internet, if they're really searching, they can get out there and they can really find the truth if they're really looking for it. And we live in very interesting times. In a way, it's, you know, we live in the worst of times, but we also live in the best of times. It's always the worst and the best simultaneously. Let's see here. Okay. I think I'll go through a little bit of email and then kind of cut this off and see if I can get headed to bed. So we'll just go through a little bit of email here. So let me scroll this up to the top. There we go. Okay. Going through this. Okay, there's an email here from Trevor. He says, I've enjoyed getting your thoughts on the subject. Your words helped me get the whole picture on what this survey may have meant. What he's talking about, there was a survey that was in Minnesota. It was the Minnesota Department of Transportation had a telemarketing survey where they were calling residents of Minnesota and kind of asking them a series of branching questions about what they thought about the roads in Minnesota and so on and so forth. And when they found out that he had been a truck driver, or, you know, and had relatives that were truck drivers, They told him, whoop, that's the end. We can't go any farther with this questions, with this series of questions. And they essentially ended the call once they found out that he had been involved in trucking. And so he was kind of curious about what that was. So anyway, that's what he's talking about here. The survey conclusion had hit a tough spot in me, which is what gave me the extra urge to contact you. Thank you for your feedback. Speaking of the state budget, I think the governor is really trying to make a push at balancing it. His original campaign was all about balancing the budget. I can't remember how long it has been. He has been in office, but the sudden big push makes me think he's been somewhat of a procrastinator, and he's trying to reclaim his promise to balance the budget. There are a lot of job cuts happening in the state as of late, too numerous to mention and keep track of, and too unfortunate also. I don't get to watch the state news anymore, as I've dropped my Dish Network account, so I've been trying to get by with listening to the local news on the radio and catching headlines on the internet. The less news I hear, the better, in my opinion. So far, so good with no cable. Good talking with you. Enjoy your weekend. And that's from Trevor. So thank you, Trevor. And I got an email here from... This is quite a long email. Well, it doesn't say who it's from. Let's see. I'm not sure who this is from. Tom, I came across this story that just might generate another podcast. And I'm sorry, I don't know who this is from. Let's see. With help, a conductor and wife ended lives. By John F. Burns, London. The controversy over the ethical and legal issues surrounding assisted suicide for the terminally ill was thrown into stark relief on Tuesday with the announcement that one of Britain's most distinguished orchestra conductors, Sir Edward Downes, had flown to Switzerland last week with his wife and joined her in drinking a lethal cocktail of barbiturates provided by an assisted suicide clinic, although friends who spoke to the British news media said Sir Edward was not known to have any or to have been terminally ill. They said he wanted to die with his ailing wife, who had been his partner for more than half a century. The couple's children said in an interview with the London Evening Standard that on Tuesday of last week, they accompanied her father's 85 and their mother Joan 74 on the flight to London to Zurich, where the Swiss group Dignitas helped arrange the suicides. On Friday, the children said they watched weeping as their parents drank small quantity of clear liquid before laying down on adjacent beds holding hands. Within a couple of minutes, they were asleep and died within 10 minutes. Cactus, something or other, down, said the couple, or the couple's 41-year-old son, said in the interview after his return to Britain, they wanted to be next to each other when they died. He added, it is a very civilized way to end your life, and I don't understand why the legal position in this country doesn't allow it. Sir Edward, who was described in a statement issued earlier on Tuesday by Mr. Downes and his sister, Boudicca, whatever that, I don't know how you pronounce that, 39, is almost blind and increasingly deaf, was principal conductor of the BBC Philharmonic Orchestra from 1980 to 1991. He was also conductor of the Royal Opera House at Covent Garden in London, where he led 950 performances of over more than 50 years. Lady Downes, who a British newspaper said was in the final stages of terminal cancer, was a former ballet dancer, choreographer, and television producer, who devoted her later years to working at her husband as her husband's assistant. After 54 happy years together, they decided to end their own lives rather than to continue to struggle with serious health problems, the Downes children said in their statement. Scotland Yard said in a statement on Tuesday that it had been informed on Monday that a man and a woman from London had died in Switzerland and that it was looking into the circumstances. The information that prompted the police inquiry appeared to have been given voluntarily by the Downs family, which C-A-R-A-C-T-A-C-U-S Downs said didn't want to be untruthful about what had happened. Even if they arrest us and send us to prison, it would have made no difference because it is what our parents wanted, he said. Attempting suicide is a criminal offense in Britain, as is assisting others in killing themselves. But since the Zurich clinic run by Dignitas was established in 1998 under Swiss laws, that allows clinics to provide lethal drugs. British authorities have effectively turned a blind eye to Britons who go there to die. None of the family members and friends who have accompanied the 117 people living in Britain who have traveled to the Zurich clinic for help in ending their lives have been charged with an offense. Legal experts said it was unlikely that would change in the Downs case. But British news reports about the Downs suicides noted one factor that appeared to set the case apart from others involving the Dignitas clinic. Sir Edward appeared not to have been terminally ill. There have been at least three other cases similar to the Downs in which a spouse who was not terminally ill chose to die with the other. Sir Edward was known for his support for British composers and his passion for Prokofiev and Verdi. After studying at the Royal College of Music in London, he joined the Royal Opera House in 1952. His first assignment was prompting the soprano Maria Callas. He traveled widely as a conductor and became music director of the Australian Opera in the 1970s. Friends of Sir Edward said that his decision to die with his wife did not surprise them. Ted was completely rational, said Richard Wigley, the general manager of the BBC Philharmonic. So I can well imagine him being so rational, saying, it's been great, so let's end our lives together. Jonathan Grove, Sir Edward's manager, called their decision typically brave and out and courageous. But even among those who support decriminalization of assisted suicide, Sir Edward's death raised troubling questions. Sarah Wooten, chief executive of Dignity in Dying, said in a BBC interview that the growing numbers of Britons going abroad to die and the manner of their deaths made it more urgent to amend Britain's laws. There are no safeguards, no brakes on the process at all, she said. The British Medical Association voted this month against legalizing assisted suicide or lifting the threat of prosecution from friends and relatives who accompanied loved ones to die abroad. Last week, the House of Lords debated a bill that would have allowed people subject to safeguards to travel abroad to help people choosing to die. So, my feeling is this. If people want to commit suicide, have at it. You know, but don't make laws that corrupt the medical system. And also, I think it's kind of a bad idea to this would be like a death center. This Dignitas in Switzerland, it's basically a death center, and I'm assuming that you don't have to necessarily, obviously you don't have to be terminally ill, because it's the guy. The husband wasn't ill, but the wife was. She was terminally ill with cancer, but he wasn't, and so they just, that clinic didn't have any problem at all helping him kill himself too, along with the wife. And so I'm assuming that, let's say somebody that's 35, let's say somebody's 35 years old and they I'm tired of living, I'm depressed or whatever. And they just go in there and pay those people to kill them. And I'm assuming that it's like a death center. It's been maybe a year or two ago, I made a little spoof. I've got it somewhere. made a little spoof thing about Planned Parenthood death centers, you know, coming to a location near you. I need to find that. I've got it stored somewhere. Need to find it. But, you know, but basically that's what this is. This Dignitas, that's basically, it's like a death center. You know, where you just go and pay someone to kill you. And, I don't know. I think it's bad. I think that's a bad idea. But, again, as long as we're not corrupting the medical system, this really isn't corrupting the medical system. Now, there have been some laws passed or attempted to be passed in certain states where it forces doctors, sort of like, you know, forces doctors to, the attempt has been made to force doctors into, you know, someone comes in and says, hey, doc, you have to help, you know, give me, you know, help me kill myself. Prescribe the drugs or whatever, help me kill myself, kind of, you know. And I think that's wrong, because that's the law kind of coming in and corrupting the medical system, because doctors are in business. Supposedly, they take a they become doctors in order to help people. They take the Hippocratic Oath and, you know, Hippocrates. They, you know, do no harm. And, of course, you know, so that, I, you know, but then again, this Dignitas, you know, I think that's a bad idea, because, you know, it's possible that someone could just be depressed, or maybe someone's really suggestible and they kind of get sucked into that, maybe become obsessed with the idea of killing themselves, or maybe somebody has suggested to them that they kill themselves, you know, because they're suggestible, they might follow through on his suggestion. And I think if they did, that potentially that's a bad thing, you know. So but if somebody wants to kill themselves, go for it, you know, but don't try to corrupt the entire society, you know, kind of assuage your own conscience. See, because that's, they want to legitimize it. That's the whole point, you know, of passing these laws, is to sort of legitimize it and make it seem like it's, the wrong is not a right. You know, that right, that wrong, turn wrong into right, and right into wrong. You know, take the conscience away. You know, that there's been, there's long been this push with abortion to legitimize it, make it a legitimate choice, and take the conscience away. And but not, you know, no matter what you say about abortion, you can, you know, you can make all the arguments in the world that you want, but in the end, it's wrong. It's wrong to murder your baby. Period. And, you know, I'll always see it as wrong. And you can make all of the, you know, you can make all the arguments in the world, and it's still wrong. Just as it's wrong to kill yourself. It's absolutely wrong to kill yourself, either to try to kill yourself directly, you know, or, you know, shoot yourself in the head or whatever, or try to get someone to help you do it. Corrupt somebody else in the process. Or even pay somebody to help you kill yourself. You know, it's sick. And it's, you know, a sick society legalizes stuff like that. A sick society tries to legitimize that type of stuff. So, anyway, let's see what else there is. So, thank you, whoever sent that to me. Then there's an email here from Gene Ryan. He says, Tom, I finally have a music podcast that I hope you get a chance to check out. A new episode of Android Radio has just been released. Check it out now. And so you can just type, go to Google, or I'm sorry, not, well, you could probably do it in Google, but Mevio. It's on Mevio, but you can probably find it also in Google. Just type in, search Android, Android Radio, and you'll find it. But it is on... He does have it on the Mevio server, so thank you, Gene. And Let's see. Then there's an email here from Jeremy. He says, "Hey, Tom, I was listening to your latest podcast where you mentioned the concept of obsessions. You talked about someone who is obsessed with old-style fans, and I immediately tried to Google that. Sure enough, I quickly found a site similar to what you described. That's Jitterbuzz, jitterbuzz.com/indian.html. Anyway, it's an interesting topic because I can relate to it. I certainly have my own obsessions with trivial things, no more rationally justifiable than a fan obsession. You also said that you can't relate to obsessive behavior. Well, I can. I don't know if I said that I couldn't relate to it. But I wondered whether you think your tattoos might qualify. Absolutely. And I am obsessed with those, and I think I said so at the time. Absolutely, I am obsessed with that. But anyway, he goes on, even if you don't think so, I'm sure you would acknowledge that an outside observer may see it differently. You don't consider yourself obsessed, but the gambler, fan collector, and fireworks probably don't feel they are obsessed either. Take care. Hope you're not getting hassled too much by the company. And it's from Jeremy. No, absolutely, I do have a tattoo obsession. There's no question about that at all. Absolutely. So anyway, let's see. So thank you, Jeremy. Think I'll cut that off here. I still have more email, but kind of getting really tired at this point. So get this thing cut off and see if I can get it sort of uploaded and published and get headed towards bed. So anyhow, hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.